welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Paul Wearson, your host for today, together with my co-host, Maggie Westfold. Welcome back, Maggie.
Hi, Paul, and hello to you, the listener. I'm really looking forward to doing a feature on the tiny houses in Colfax. It's in Jasper County, a little east of our listening area, but it's an easy drive for a day trip. And I'm excited to tell our listeners more about tiny houses.
Well, now, I always like to learn new things, and tiny houses are pretty much news to me. So I'm eager to hear your report today, Maggie. Then in the last half of the program, we'll bring you a preview of this year's Storytelling Festival in Story City.
That sounds like a very busy weekend coming up, and a busy month.
Oh, it sure is. And to begin our show today, we have Story County Outreach and Special Projects Coordinator, Leanne Harder. Hello, Leanne.
Good morning.
You tell us about everything that's happening in Story County that's worth knowing about and what's going on.
Well, I'm going to start with inviting the public and all the listeners to the Healthiest Walk Initiative that's held every year. This year, Story County, the Board of Supervisors, and our Wellness Committee are sponsoring four walks all at the same time, beginning at 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Actually, you can walk any time in that time range. Four locations. You can start at McFarland Park, northeast of Ames, the Human Services Center here in Ames, the Justice Center, and the Administration Building in Nevada. So everyone's invited to come join us as we walk along with everyone else in the state of Iowa on October 4th. I really want to express this next announcement with some caution, because Treasurer Renee Tweet would like to remind everyone that the first half of property taxes are due.
I know I'm involved with that.
Yeah. People always don't like to hear that announcement, but you have now until the end of the month before penalties come in. So September 30th, pay your first half of property taxes. You can mail them in, you can pay them in person, or you can go online at www.iowatreasurers.org, and I highly recommend you don't wait until the last day of the month to come in, because then the lines get very, very long. Community services also would like to share, and I think I said this last month too, but a reminder that an evening of hope and healing, the 2017 Mental Health Expo, is almost a week away, a week from yesterday, Tuesday, September 19th. It'll be held from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Iowa State Memorial Union in the Sunroom. There'll be more than 20 vendors present, door prizes and refreshments. It is open to the public, and you can park, I think, in the Union. So Mental Health Expo, Tuesday, September 19th. Story County Conservation has a couple messages. One, I encourage everyone to go online and follow progress on the Hickory Grove Lake Restoration Project. There was a public meeting held last night at Hickory Grove. It was hosted by Story County Conservation and the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. They are beginning a multi-year long project to restore that lake to where it once was. Hickory Grove is really our jewel of Story County Conservation and Story County. It's a wonderful amenity, but unfortunately, it is currently listed in the state's list of impaired waters. It's listed such because it's due to high levels of indicator bacteria, which is E. coli and algae. And the overall goal of the restoration project is to improve water quality and those recreational opportunities of the lake. It will be a 2 to 4 year project. Again, check Story County Conservation's website, which I'll give you that information here soon, for updates on the project and how you can follow along. One thing to note on that, the lake will be drained over the next couple of years. But plugging Dakin's Lake in northeast Story County for those fishermen out there, I think there's some wonderful opportunities to get some good-sized fish up in Dakin's Lake over the next 2 to 5 years. Also, the Partners Park Festival is coming up. Story County Conservation's annual Partners Fall Festival will be Sunday, October 1st from 3 to 6 p.m. It'll be held at McFarland Park, which is at 56461 180th. That is northeast of Ames. It is a no-cost public event that features live music, nature activities, and this year they're bringing in a food truck. Kick off the month of October with the Partners Fall Festival. The changing seasons are wonderful up there. If you've never been there, you can listen to traditional and modern blues music from Red's Blues. Children will have fun making crafts and doing nature activities. They unleash their creativity. The mobile mallard from Mucky Duck Pub will be there offering food vending. And then there will be booths and displays from the Iowa Purple Martin Organization, Community Conservation, Conservation Corps Iowa, Ames Smart Watersheds, and more. For more information, go ahead and call Story County Conservation at 232-2516. And you can email them. And I would recommend if you have questions about the Hickory Grove Watershed Project, you can email them as well. And that email is simply conservation@storycountyiowa.gov. I also do want to note that Story County had a blood drive in the last part of August. Very successful. We did 2 days, August 24th and 25th. Over those 2 days, we had 79 units of blood donated. The statistic is every unit of blood has the opportunity to save up to 3 lives. So you take that roughly 80 times 3, that's 240 lives. 23 new donors signed up over those 2 days. And I think that's even more phenomenal than the number of units, because really it is intimidating the first time you go get blood. But once you've done it, you don't look back. In most cases. Then Veterans Affairs, Brett McLean would like to encourage everyone to keep in mind that September is Suicide Prevention Month. There are several resources that we'd like to share to help connect veterans in crisis with the help they need. And for those loved ones around those veterans, see the signs and know that you have a part to play as well. I'll get these to the station so you can put them online too. It's veteranscrisisline.net, and this has a list of warning signs when someone is in crisis. That's also the Suicide Prevention Month website, too, for veterans. Then, of course, the VA's Veterans Crisis Line, which is a toll-free number at 1-800-273-8255, and you press 1, and it allows you to check online, chat online. And then Make the Connection website, which is maketheconnection.net. So if you have any questions for me about what you've heard today, or you want to simply reach out and I can give you any information or try to give you any information you want about Story County, I'm at 515-382-7247. You can email me at lharter@storycountyiowa.gov. Or go on our website at www.storycountyiowa.gov.
And everything you've talked about today, you can view on the website.
Yes, you
and
can.
One thing I'd like to know a little more about is the Evening of Hope and Healing. That's coming up Tuesday, September 19th, 6 to 8 p.m. at the Memorial Union at Iowa State. And you mentioned that earlier in your list of things coming up, featuring author, comedian, and mental health advocate Sarah Benincesa. I probably murdered her name, but she looks like someone who's very talented, very knowledgeable. And is this the first thing we've done like that?
No, Leah? This is the second year we've done it.
How did it go last year?
I think very well received. I will have to get back to you. I forget the numbers that attended, but it was well in the hundreds.
Really?
So a lot of people appreciated the message that was given out. We have a mental health crisis nationwide. And so this is an opportunity to attend and maybe if you are hurting, not feel so alone.
Right. Now, she comes with a real pedigree here and a lot of experience. It also says she's a comedian, so she must be able to inject humor into this presentation, too.
Yeah. The keynote's entitled Help, You Need Somebody. And I think that speaks volumes.
I feel that way every morning when I get up. Help, I need somebody at my age, you know. Well, Leanne, sounds like a lot of stuff happening at Story County and all these things coming up. You can reach them and reach the website or call Leanne and just find out all the things that you've just had a little glance at. Now, you can see more in full if you go to the website and These are exciting things coming up as we go into fall. And Story County is the place to be, and Leanne is the person to tell you about it. And you come every month. It's so kind of you to do that.
I do come every month, so I'll be back in October.
We're counting on it.
Where I'll be October.
What is this, September? Yeah, you'll be here in October and in November. Well, Leanne Harder from Story County, thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Now, this is KHOI Community Radio. We just heard our monthly report from Leanne Harder, the Special Projects Coordinator for Story County, giving us the monthly report of events sponsored throughout the county. Now I'm going to turn the mic over to my co-host, Maggie Westfold. She'll be talking to us on she's taking us on a surprising trip to Jasper County, Maggie, right?
Yes, Paul, thank you. Hello, KHOI listeners. Tiny houses are one option in the real estate market these days for those who seek to live the really simple lifestyle. Today, we're going to be talking with Renee McLaughlin, the event coordinator for a Tiny House and Simple Living Festival. It's going to be held later this month at Colfax, Iowa. Renee, I understand this is the first time a Tiny House Festival has been held in the Midwest. Can you tell us how that came about?
Sure. I do live in a tiny house myself and really follow the movement. I followed it to Colorado last year to the National Tiny House Jamboree and then to a few other festivals. And I thought, you know, we need this. We need this here in Iowa. And there are now festivals all over the country, but they skirt the Midwest. Oh. And I think it's a great idea to share that message everywhere in the U.S., but also because the tiny house movement actually started right here in Iowa.
Okay, that's fascinating little piece of information. I believe you've talked with me about a gentleman named Jay Schaefer who's involved in this. Can you talk about Jay and his background with the tiny houses?
Sure. Jay actually graduated here at Ames High School. And he went on to Iowa, was an art student there, master in fine arts, and then taught at the University of Iowa. But he actually built his first tiny house on wheels, which is kind of the classic model that gained popularity right around the housing crisis, of course. So around 2007, I think he was on Oprah, and 2008 and 2009, he just was all over the country, and the tiny house movement really took off then.
Okay, well, thank you. Describe a tiny house and the idea behind tiny houses generally.
Sure. A lot of people actually ask me to define the size of a tiny house, so I'm glad you didn't say that, because really a tiny house or a small house is really a house that's appropriate for its use. And so, of course, you know, if there's going to be a large household, a tiny house is going to be a little bigger than if it's a, you know, a single person with certain needs. So most people think of a tiny house, though, as something around 100 to 400 square feet. We see a lot of tiny houses on wheels, especially on television. And I guess you're going to see those out on the road more often than the tiny house without wheels. So that's kind of a common image that comes to mind. And it really looks very much like a house shrunk down to tiny proportions.
Yeah, I've watched I spent a little too much time in a chair last fall for health reasons, so I watched tiny houses. Fascinating to the point of I thought, I don't know if I can see any more tiny houses here because I was watching too much. It was fascinating, though, and the people were so interesting. What kind of person do you think wants to live that lifestyle? Can you describe that person for us?
Sure. It's quite a broad community of ages and styles. But one thing that is pretty common in the tiny house community is that folks are more interested in, I would say, relationships and experiences and, you know, doing something with their lives other than purchasing and managing stuff. You know, we have,
that stuff thing. That's I know about that.
Yeah, that's definitely a common thread amongst tiny house folks is that, you know, it's really all about the people rather than the things And
okay, that's interesting. I don't believe I could live in one. I would feel really proud of myself if I could. All right, let's talk about your event a little bit. What can folks expect to experience at the event in late September?
Well, as you said, you've seen the tiny houses on TV, and a lot of people have seen them on TV. But one of the great things about the festival is you get to walk inside and actually tour these tiny houses and get a feel for what is it like. I think on TV, you know, they enter the house, they always say, it's bigger than I thought, or it's smaller than I thought. So we have these kind of preconceived ideas of what it might feel like. Mm-hmm. And so you get to experience that. There are actually tiny houses coming from all over the country. And so you can check them all out, really talk to the builders, whether they be professional builders, DIY built houses. Some are school bus conversions. Those are very popular. Mm-hmm. They call those schoolies. And mm-hmm. A couple off-grid capable campers. And some of the homes are off-grid capable. So really a great learning experience to not only learn about the houses, but a lot of self-sustaining ways to grow in your life and simplify. There are speakers and workshops all weekend. There is a marketplace as well where you can really learn about some of the products besides see them that are common for a tiny house, or just enjoy looking at different things. And there's, of course, live music all weekend as well. Food trucks and the Iowa craft beer tent will be there. So we did not forget the festival part of the Tiny House Festival.
And tell us, would you give us the dates again?
Sure. It's September 22nd, 3rd, and 4th.
Okay.
And it is in Colfax at the Jasper County Fairgrounds.
Okay. Not so far away here from Ames, anyway. Would you like to share a website or Facebook page with the listeners?
Sure. On Facebook, it's easy to find Tiny Fest, TinyFest. And then online, tinyfestmidwest.com.
All right. Thank you for that. Let's see. We've talked about you do get to go inside these homes. About how many will be there? Do you know the number of homes we'll see?
Sure. There are a couple dozen. Right now, the numbers fluctuate a little bit here and there, but we're sitting right around 24 or 25 structures.
Okay.
It includes professionally built houses, DIY built houses, and some houses that are there with charity organizations who are using the homes to help raise awareness and also to end homelessness here in central Iowa.
All right. That's wonderful. You talked a little bit about the different types, like school buses. Do you think more of them are mobile? Or people set these on foundations sometimes?
People do set them on foundations, and that's very common, especially if someone finds a place that they really want to stay, you know, that they love and they're sure they're in their forever home. And here in Iowa, I think a lot of people will put them out as kind of a lake property or out in their country property just to enjoy maybe as a second home.
That sounds attractive to me. Have one of those somewhere to just you said you live in one. How long have you lived in a tiny house?
I have lived in my tiny house for a year and a half. And my tiny house is actually a teeny, tiny, tiny house. They consider it a micro house generally when it's under 100 square feet. And mine is right about 87.
Wow.
It's been a big change. I just sold a house, actually. I just sold my big house, as I call it. I haven't lived there for a few years now, several years. But that was 3,300 square feet.
Oh,
so quite
my.
A big difference.
I bet you had to go through an adjustment.
I did, but I actually moved to an island in Alaska for a while. So moving there, you really pare down. It kind of forces you to think about how valuable is that thing to you when you have to pay to ship it to an island so far away. And when you start looking at things, what do you need? What do you have? Why do you have it? How often do you use it? And could you find a substitute if you didn't have that particular item in the kitchen? Could you still choose something else that might work? And so you can pare down pretty well.
Yeah, that must be a really good feeling, too. Did you have separation anxiety for any of those things that you made yourself learn to live without? Did you go through that?
No, I didn't.
No?
I know some people did, but I just really have not had that yet.
I find it a fascinating thing. As I said, I've watched it, heard the people talk about it a lot on TV. I think it's going to be fun to have this event. I plan to be there to see these and experience the event. The whole. It sounds like you have a fun weekend planned for people. And let's get it. Will Jay Schaefer be there? Will he be able to?
Jay will be there. Okay. He lives in California now, and so he's flying in for the event and will be the keynote speaker. They lovingly call him the godfather of the tiny house movement. He's often referred to as the pioneer of the tiny house movement. So pretty special to have Jay here joining us. And
yeah, so he's an Ames guy.
He is. He spent part of his young life in California and then went to middle school here and high school. And I did not know this. I met Jay knowing who he was and you know, all about how we kind of got things going. And talking to him, I learned, yeah, we both went to Central. We both went to Ames High.
Is there anything else you think people would like to know about this whole topic, Renee? What kind of turnouts have you had at your other events?
Well, the tiny house festivals that I've been to across the country have drawn tremendous crowds. Often 60,000 people. That's really not unheard of for a tiny house festival. We're not quite expecting that many people in Colfax, looking, though, at 10 to 20,000. And so that'll be about 10 times the size of that tiny town. So it's really something that is very interesting to people. And I hear a lot of people say, I love those tiny houses. I couldn't do it. Because, and they have a reason, often they have kids or they have a hobby that requires space or they just have too much stuff.
That'd be my thing right there.
But there are a lot of families that go tiny and we can help get rid of that stuff if you'd like. It's interesting, I think, to a lot of people, though, because we are getting to what I call a material overload. In the U.S., the housing size, just in my lifetime, so within the last 50 years, the housing size has gone up from about 1,700 square feet to 2,700 square feet for new homes. Mm-hmm. So you have an extra 1,000 square feet, and family sizes have gotten smaller. And so what happens is we end up with these houses that have generally more TVs than people. There are often 300,000, that's what they say, 300,000 items in your house.
Yeah.
And you think about how many items do I need to be happy and to help me reach my goals in life and to have a good mission in my life. And I imagine that most people could probably do with a few less than 300,000.
I think you're right. I personally live in my husband and I live in a 1950s story and a half. Mm-hmm. So closets is the first thing that comes to my mind because we've had to double rod every closet in the house and then make more space. Today, people's closets are as big as a room, really, that you
as
walk into
a
closet. Yes. So it's just a different life today, and I so admire people who are able to. This tiny house life is not for everyone, certainly, but it's fascinating. You said how many square feet in your home?
Minus 87.
87. You can barely turn around. It must be highly efficient. That sounds fascinating. Your bed probably folds out.
Actually, it doesn't.
No?
Oh, and
so
it takes
you just
up
lay
a lot
back
of space.
And read.
Right,
okay.
Yeah. So my couch and my bed are the same.
Yeah.
And my shower and my closet are the same. So I have swing arm rod that some of my clothes hang on. And when it's time to take a shower, I swing them out. And then when I'm done, I swing the arm back in with my clothes. So, yes, everything in a tiny house seems to pull double duty at least, if not triple.
To me, it sounds like engineering to the max. The minds that design these things have to be totally out of the box, which is just such interesting stuff to me. And I love to hear people talk about this lifestyle that maybe we don't all need to want, but we need to think about the way we are living today. Some of the things that you just talked about, TV in every room.
Right. And, you know, when you have all those items, 300,000, they all came in packaging. We go through a lot of money Americans spend. You know, they say average 50 to 60% of their income on their house and their items in their house. And that's a lot of money that could be used very differently. Really, when I went tiny, I learned a lot about what I was buying and why. Because I'd start going into the store and I'd look at something and, it's only $3. But where would I put it? Why would I need it? And so I am purchasing less, so then I noticed that I'm not going through as much of the garbage, and I was able to focus on cleaning and sorting and organizing and running to the storage unit with all of these items. So then I have time to think about, oh, hey, how could I minimize even my recycling bin? It was getting full so quickly, and I thought, why am I going through all of these items? So, right. You know, really can focus on those kind of goals very easily without feeling like it's a lot of work and a lot of hassle.
Right.
It just kind of
comes
naturally.
A way of thinking.
Why don't you give us the information on the festival again? Just repeat that for us and your website and your Facebook page and all that information.
Sure. Tiny Fest Midwest will be held in Colfax, Iowa on September 22nd, 3rd, and 4th, which is just next weekend. And more information can be found on the website. You can purchase tickets on the website ahead of time. They're a little bit more at the gate, but they are available there. And the website, again, is tinyfestmidwest.com. And we do put a lot of information on Facebook. At Tiny Fest is our Facebook page.
Okay.
And so there's a lot of fun videos there. There are a lot of stories surrounding tiny houses and tiny house people especially. And so it's really fun to learn people's stories and get to know the different personalities that are involved in the tiny house movement.
All right. Well, thank you, Renee. I've really enjoyed talking with you about this today. We're gonna finish up here with, I think after a bit here, we're even going to have a fun little song that addresses this issue. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio 89.1 FM. And I'm your host, Maggie Westfold. We've been hearing from Renee McLaughlin, event coordinator for a Tiny House and Simple Living Festival coming up later this month. Thank you for coming by to talk with us this morning, Renee.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
Whispering in each other's ears, you know you were right. Before the rose best in little houses, a few walls to separate where you eat and sleep so close together. You can't help but communicate. Oh, and if we had more room between us, think of all we'd miss. What grows best in houses just like this? Yeah, love grows best in houses just like this.
That was the chorus from Little Houses by Doug Stone, a fitting conclusion for our conversation with Renee McLaughlin, telling us about the Tiny Houses and Simple Living Festival taking place in Colfax on September 22nd, 23rd, and 24th. This is KHOI Community Radio, celebrating with the communities in Central Iowa. Closer to home, Paul Wearson is bringing us a preview of this year's Story Festival in Story City this coming weekend, September 14th, 15th, and 16th.
Well, thanks, Maggie. And the festival is going to be a little different this year from years past. Years ago, we brought in multicultural storytellers to diversify the entertainment, usually from different cultures and states. Now, this year's feature storyteller, Darren Crow, is an Iowa native who focuses on Iowa stories. And we're fortunate to have Darren with us today as a guest here on Local Talk. Welcome, Darren.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for letting me stop by.
Well, it's nice through the miracle of communication today to talk to you right here in our studio. Now, I talked to you yesterday, and there were a lot of kids in the background. You must have a family there, huh?
I do have a family, but my kids are all teenagers and almost adults. I was actually in a music class subbing for the music teacher, and I thought, oh, I can take that phone call
okay.
for just a minute.
Well, I just thought those, as you were babysitting about 30 kids or something. And you're out of Cedar Rapids there, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
And how did you get started in storytelling? How did that come about?
Oh, man, mostly it was because my work in living history, at living history museums. And most of working in a museum, of course, is talking about and telling stories largely about old stuff, but the people who used that old stuff. And so that's what got me started, especially loving a good story.
Then when did you start performing extensively on your own then?
One of our board members in the Northland Storytelling Network just put out a question the other day on our listserv asking, what was the first time you actually got paid to tell a story? And I was trying to think back, and I think it was about 25 years ago in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, and this is almost embarrassing, panhandling at a farmer's market.
Really? And that was the beginning of all this.
Yes, over the last 7 years or so, 7-8 years, I about that time realized what I really liked doing was telling the stories about Iowa people and stories in general, even more than I liked stories about stuff. So I asked my wife one day, I said, hey, I think I could do this and make a living doing it. Do you mind if I quit my job?
And she said?
She said, sure, whatever you want to do.
She's a lovely woman.
Remarkably good with budgeting, and so life is good.
So the stories you tell, there's a large variety in terms of time and place and era?
Yes. Yes, I do kind of move back and forth from, you know, fairy tales and folk tales that we've been telling for thousands of years to stories of the American Revolution to Iowa history. I'm working right now on an exciting story that is an ancient Irish epic from, I think it was written down in the 12 or 1300s. And it's delightful. It's funny and violent and moving and all kinds of cool stuff.
Now, how many festivals do you go to, like the one we have in Story City? Are you booked for things like that frequently or what?
You know, a couple throughout the year here and there. I spend most of my time in Iowa. Summers are beautifully busy because I get to visit small-town libraries all over the state and meet all these tremendous librarians who know everyone in their town and know what books they need, and it's really neat.
Well, years ago, I happened to win the storytelling contest at the state fair, and Christy Vilsack had me tell my story at Terrace Hill, standing on that ornate staircase, and all the librarians, there was a librarian, statewide librarian meeting there, so my audience was a whole bevy of librarians, and wow, these people are all involved with stories and books, and I felt like I was talking to a very astute audience. So you're a library guy too,
right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, oh my, yes.
Well, you have to watch your grammar and everything, you know. But this storytelling festival in Story City really is an opportunity to expose yourself to a lot of folks who sort of go to these storytelling festivals as something they enjoy. We have people, and it's been fascinating. There are people from Michigan. Very early on, we found our audience came from out of town. And there are devotees who come to the Story Festival every year from surprising distances. And the other factor is that we go to the schools, and you're planning to be in the schools too, Darren, that's right, isn't it?
Yes, I'm very excited about that.
And, you know, I'm going to be there. I always watch the storytellers at the school because, especially at the high school, it's a metamorphosis. You know, I remember once we had a storyteller from Appalachia, and he was an older man with a bow tie, and especially the boys in the high school walked in their warm-up suits, kind of in a surly mood, you know, and they, it's another assembly, you know, who's that guy? And in 10 minutes, he had him rolling in the aisles. In fact, I knew the mother of one of the boys, and he texted her saying, this is the greatest thing ever. Thing for me is to watch this metamorphosis, especially in the middle and high school, where kids come in challenging you to entertain them, and pretty soon they're all swept up in this, you know. And I'm sure that'll happen to you as you go to the middle school and high school. And I'm sure you'll engage them right away, and they'll be talking about you for the rest of the day.
I'm excited and looking forward to it, that's for sure.
Well, I'll be there as part of your audience. And I suppose you have to gear these things for age groups. If you go to a school or a library where you might be talking to a summer reading program for young people, you'd select different stories than you would for an adult audience, obviously, right?
Well, yes. And the same story can change quite a bit depending on the age group that is going to hear it.
Now, do you ever tell stories from your own life and experience also?
You know, that is one aspect of storytelling that I really want to work on, because I don't, and I am fascinated by people who tell personal stories well, and it's something I've always been a little scared of, and so I haven't jumped for that, and I need to push myself and do so.
Well, you know, that's what my storytelling was, a coming-of-age story in Story City, and I enjoyed doing that. And other stories from life and times in Iowa growing up in my era, you know, the 50s and 60s and all that sort of thing. But in Story City this weekend, there's going to be a whole raft of opportunities to be exposed to the festival. We have a dessert and a show. That's on Thursday, September 14th. That'll be at the fabulous Old Story Theater. And that is featuring Eric Hansen, who is the anchor at KCCI Television in Des Moines. He's from Roland, so he's a native of the area. And then you, Darren, you're going to be there. And Tom
Ooh, I'll
Milligan.
Do anything for dessert.
Yeah, well, you'll earn your keep, that's for sure. And you'll be fascinated by the theater because it's been operating as a movie theater and never closed since 1913. It's on the National Historic Register. So you'll like that performance venue. And also we have Tom Milligan, and he actually is not a storyteller. He does a portrayal of the great cartoonist at the Register, Ding Darling. And so he'll be
I'm really looking forward to seeing that.
Yes, you know, I'm sure that when you do perform, you encounter other people who are a real education and an illumination for you. And so
Tom's work is tremendous. I enjoy seeing anything I can that Tom does. So,
and then Friday, the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee, presented by Judge Story Theatrical Troupe, the local community theater, and that is at 7 p.m. up at the Grand Viking Hall, which is above the City Hall, and that used to be a hotel, and so there are all these windows up there. It's a big hall, and I saw the performance last weekend, and I have to warn everybody that this is not a kid's show. It's adult entertainment. So don't bring your child, even though it's about adults playing children. It's a very adult show. So I, in the audience, there was a little girl, and I kind of looked over and thought, ooh. Anyway, it was educational. Then Saturday.
It's a show I have heard a lot about and never been able to see, so I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Oh, yeah, be sure and see that show because it's hilarious, and we have a lot of local talent, like every community around here seems to have a thriving, very talented community theater. And then you're giving a workshop at 9:30 at the Bertha Bartlett Library in downtown Story City. And tell us about the workshop, Darren. What do you try to do in a workshop?
Well, this one is really going to focus on taking a story, you know, because we all find our little book of stories, and there's a story right there, and how do I get it from that story on the page to making it a story that's unique to me, that's got my words and my physicality, so that it becomes your own unique story. So I'm excited to play around and get people up and moving and have fun.
Well, how does that go for you? Now, when you present yourself in that workshop, people come in not knowing what to expect. How do you handle that and get them moving?
Well, you have to hope that somebody who's coming to a workshop is going to know, well, golly, that's a darn good question. You just have to hope that people are going to be willing to get up and play. And if they don't want to get up and play, that's all right. I'm not going to go and look at you and say, George, why are you sitting down?
Right. So I bet you have your way of seducing these people into joining in and learning about how to do a story. And all the workshops I've seen in prior years from storytellers always had to do with getting folks to think differently about what storytelling is. In fact, we had to learn ourselves when we founded the festival, because we put the storytellers in that story theater where you'll perform on the Presidium stage with the house lights down. Oh, no, the storyteller said, no, we want to work down on the floor in front of the audience with the house lights on, because storytelling is not just a performance. It's highly interactive. You'd agree with that, right, Darren?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And so we learned that lesson, and we just found out that storytelling is, in many ways, a remarkable different thing than straight performance in a theatric setting. And that was really edifying for us, because we found out that storytelling is special. And especially in the schools, they need to learn what storytelling is. And the people who come to the storytelling festival, if they haven't been there before, they also learn that storytelling is remarkably more intimate and special, and that's what keeps them coming back. And it's fun to watch them discover that. I bet you have fun watching them discover that too, don't you?
It is. It is an awful lot of fun to watch an audience get involved in a story and to feel like you really are, you know, giving back and forth. It's exciting and, yeah, makes you feel good.
Oh, yeah. And I just, in my limited experience in storytelling, I felt the same way and experienced the same thing. We also have a writer's forum. This is also at the Bertha Bartlett Public Library, and these feature Iowa authors, and they will be there to talk about their books and their art at the public library. And then here's something that involves me. Downtown, at various business stops, we're going to have figures being portrayed from Story City history, and they will be businessmen from the 20s and early 20th century, various historical figures standing by the building they occupied at the time they were in business. And I will have the honor of playing A.M. Henderson, my uncle, who was postmaster and a banker in Story City, and standing by the building in which he did his labors back in the, right around Woodrow Wilson's time, so early 20th century. And then we have...
I love historic tour walks like that.
Yeah, well,
I think they're so fascinating.
Well, I hope you come, and it's just a station, you know. You go on, and the group moves from figure to figure, and if you're free during part of that time, it's from 1 o'clock to 3. And so these are local Story City people portraying these early Story Cityans who were a big factor in the downtown area in business in the past. And we have all kinds of things going on in Grand Viking Hall, where on Friday evening we have that Putnam County Spelling Bee performance. There's a vendor fair up there from 11 to 3 all day, basically, where we have vendors and board games and all kinds of things. And then at 7 o'clock on Saturday at the Fairview Lodge, which is down by the carousel in the park, scary stories. And Darren, you're going to be telling scary stories at Saturday night?
Yes, I'm looking forward to it. I've been working on it and trying to decide which of my favorite ones I want to do. So,
well, you really have to hope that after you're done with your story, even adults go home and turn on the nightlight, you know.
Boy, that's the goal, isn't it?
Oh, it sure is. But I think that the Story Festival is really a highlight of the year at Story City and kind of unique. And it sure fits the community, a storytelling festival at Story City. You know, it makes a lot of sense.
Isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Well,
one thing,
it's really unique. We have very wide streets in Story City. That's the first thing you'll notice. They're very wide. And you'll also enjoy that theater, because that goes way, way back, and you'll enjoy performing there. And I'm sure the owner will give you a tour backstage. There's all kinds of interesting stuff there, too.
Ah.
Is there a favorite era that you like to talk about, Darren?
Man, I am a big fan of that middle part of the 19th century, the pioneer era in Iowa. If there was a way I could travel back in time with a hot shower and flush toilets.
Yeah, you got to have the conveniences, of course.
I would visit the pioneer era and meet some of these folks that settled Iowa, because they were remarkable people who did amazing things and suffered through tremendous hardships to create what I think is a pretty awesome state. And I'd love to meet those folks and see what it was that drove them.
And you did work at Living History Farms, is that correct?
Not at a Living History, at Usher's Ferry Historic Village in Cedar Rapids.
Oh, so a very similar thing to the Living History Farms venue in Des Moines. And I've gone there, too, and there are just people there that are fascinating who portray various trades and, of course, all the farms of different eras to show you how farming developed in Iowa. And you're right about the 19th century. You know, this is a very inhospitable place. It was all prairie grass and sinkholes and wetlands and a marvelous ecosystem. But at the same time, you had to use your imagination to think that you could make a home here.
Yeah. And the folks who you know, I'm sure Judge Story probably experienced similar things to, say, Judge Green in Cedar Rapids, where he comes over the hill, looks out at this broad river valley and says, "My word, this is the perfect place for a town. If I get this, we'll all be rich.
Yeah,
let's start a town."
Well, you know, my ancestors were from Norway, and there was a stopping off or group place where everyone gathered in Lisbon, Illinois. Like, my grandfather was born in Lisbon, and they would send men out into Iowa to locate homestead land and then bring the families by wagon later. And they came from a rocky, mountainous country where the soil was very spare. And I'm just thinking how marvelous it must have been for them to see this rich, dark loam, you know.
Oh,
just think about that, the contrast.
It must have been awesome.
Yeah.
And just the idea of seeing nothing but, you know, more than head-high grass as far as you could see from one end of the world to the other must have been an overwhelming sight.
It must have been like an ocean, like looking at waves of grass in the wind, you know, just like an ocean.
Yeah.
And to see possibilities in that, and to see the immense amount of work it took and takes to make a homestead out of that.
Oh, I can't even imagine the amount of work that it took, you know, just to get 1 acre of ground so you could grow a little bit of food to last through the winter.
And there are all kinds
of stories. It's romantic to think about.
Well, yeah, the stories of privation. I had a cousin who, she was the only survivor of her family. All of them died of scarlet fever. And she was alone in the cabin, and someone found her. She was, 5 years old or something like that. And everyone had died except her. And so people were isolated, too, you know. The isolation, the elements and the extreme temperatures. Just think of living in Iowa as we do, Darren, to have a 90-degree day in the summer and below zero in the winter without our modern insulation and protection. Think of what that was like. There have got to be stories about that, you know.
And then so many of our immigrants and folks moving to Iowa arrived expecting something so different, because the books that the promoters put out, they said, Iowa's climate is perfect. It rarely gets above 70 in the summer, and the winters are never very cold. There are no bugs.
They should be arrested, frankly. I hope somebody called their bluff sometime.
So
a lot of your stories are about this kind of heroism and pioneer spirit. You love to tell those stories.
Yep.
And that's really a story of everybody here in Iowa at some time or another, because A, we're all immigrants. B, we all came from somewhere else. And C, most of our lifetime, we came from farming and, you know, rural communities where our founding fathers here in Iowa were farmers and agrarian type people. And so all of us have roots on the farm and on the pioneer era.
So, well, and we have this marvelous heritage of example that, that these previous generations have set for us in Iowa. And one thing I love to point out to small children when I'm telling these stories is, you know, these are the folks who they saw a problem in front of them and they didn't say, somebody ought to do something about that. They said, I ought to do something about that. And then they did it.
Or and, I have to do that, something about that. Survival yeah. might be an issue, right?
Absolutely. And that's one of the great examples that we have. And one of the things that we as younger Iowans have to live up to.
Oh, yes.
Is continuing to be the people that say, I'm going to do something about that rather than somebody ought to.
And that's probably what your stories highlight, the fact that you might be talking about something that happened a century ago that has application today in how we face life and how we conquer difficulties and overcome what to us are huge obstacles. And when you put them in the context of pioneer life, our concerns are really minuscule. A stuffed toilet is nothing compared to an outhouse in 10 below zero weather, right?
Man, I don't know. Sometimes I think toilets are the bane of my existence when I've got that plunger in my hand.
Yeah.
Well, I would take an outhouse over this thing.
Well, it's so easy to defeat us, you know. A problem,
yeah.
You know, we've got to call somebody, you know. It's very, very easy for us to be perplexed by anything that goes wrong in a real intricate digital world. And so I think anything, particularly for the young people, you'll talk with during the festival, and when you're, I'm really glad you're going to the schools because, you know, it's just very hard to make history live if you're a teacher, and it's a real gift to them if you can do that for the students, you know. And I'm sure looking forward to your presentation at school. I'm looking forward to your presentation on in the theater on Thursday, and I'm hope you're getting a good turnout for your workshop on Saturday at the library, because people who go to those are surprised by what a great fun experience it is and that they too can be storytellers. So Darren Crowe will be telling stories at the Story City Storytelling Festival this weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, the 14th and 15th and 16th. You can see Darren at, well, at 6:30 p.m., on Thursday at the Old Story Theater. He'll be on this, on the program with Eric Hansen from KCCI and Tom Milligan, who's performing the great cartoonist Ding Darling. And Darren will be there for the workshop on Saturday. Please come to the festival and have that experience. Darren Crowe, we will see you in Story City this weekend.
Thanks so much for letting me visit with you this morning.
And have a good, safe trip over.
Thank you very much. Have a good morning.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I've been one of your hosts, Maggie Westbolt, together with my co-host, Paul Wearson. Thank you for joining us. Earlier in the show, we heard from Leanne Harder, Renee McLaughlin, and Darren Crowe.
Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. right here on KHOI at 89.1 FM. Also, remember that you can hear it online at khoifm.org, and you can find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org.
Today's show was engineered by Rebecca Reuter. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was Little Houses by Doug Stone. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show. So if you would like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. Come and join the Local Talk team.
And now stay tuned for Democracy Now! With headline news at the top of the hour. Morning masterpieces will follow at 9 a.m. And, you know, let us know what you think. You can call us at 515-292-2878, or you can email us at khoiradio@gmail.com, or go to the contact page of our website, khoifm.org. And remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
Support for KHOI comes from Mary Greeley Medical Center, providing inpatient and outpatient services on a continuum of care. Located at 1111 Duff Avenue in Ames. Find out more information at www.mgmc.org. That's mgmc.org.
Funding for KHOI comes in part from the Octagon Center for the Arts, bringing you the Octagon Art Festival, with original artwork, live entertainment, and a variety of food. Information is available at octagonarts.org. That's octagonarts.org.
Whispering in each other's ears, you know you were right. People that rose best in little houses with few walls to separate. Eat and sleep so close together, you can't help but communicate. Oh, and if we had more room between us, think of all we'd miss. What grows best in houses just like this? Yeah, love grows best in houses just like this.